You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello everyone and welcome to this week's edition of the Spanish Football Podcast. I'm Phil Kitramalides, joined as ever by Dr. Sid Lowe from a very wet Madrid, Sydney, but not as wet as we thought it was going
to
be.
Yeah, not so wet that I could, that you know, that I definitely couldn't have gone to the, I was about to call it the Wander again, the Metropolitano, the Civitas Metropolitano, the Atletico Madrid against Sevilla, which was cancelled because of the warnings of the rain that was coming. And there was a lot of it, but probably not enough to have cancelled it, as it turned out. Obviously, much, much better to be safe than sorry.
That's true. It is better to be safe than sorry. It, you know, some of us who were maybe raised in the Northern Europe and saw the water that fell yesterday, and it really wasn't that much. But yeah, better to be safe than sorry, I guess. They're now going to have a problem where to fit in this rescheduled game, Atletico Madrid against Sevilla. They're talking about, Sydney, potentially the 30th or 31st of December. Which would be nice, good.
Which basically means that we'll all pretend it hasn't happened.
Yeah. Let's do that. If you've been loving La Liga so far this season, and why wouldn't you? Why not add the Spanish Football Podcast to your life on Patreon? You can join us, patreon.com/TSFP. This week, patrons are going to get a Q&A pod and a bonus podcast. Plus, it's time for the return of TSFP Presents with a brand new series. All of that, you get access to the TSFP Discord. Join us. It's around €4 a month. patreon.com/TSFP. So, we've just had match day 4 in La Liga this season. This is what happened. Friday night, a big result for Cadiz. They beat Villarreal by 3-1, 7 points from a possible 12. For Cadiz, a really good start to the season for them. Darwin Machis scoring an absolute belter in that game. And then there was another terrific game at the Power Horse Stadium. Almeria 2, Celta Vigo 3. Celta were 2-0 up, then it was 2-2. And then obviously Barold Aspas scoring the winner for Celta Vigo. Then on Saturday, a massive, massive win for La Real. They beat Granada by 5-3 at the Reale Arena. Some absolutely beautiful goals scored by Imanol Aguafil's team. Then Real Madrid needed a 95th minute winner by you'll never guess who. Yes, Jude Bellingham scored again, this time late on for Real Madrid to beat Getafe 2-1 at the Bernabeu. First game of the season at the Bernabeu. Alaves beat Valencia by 1-0 and Betis beat Rayo by the same scoreline. Then on Sunday, Girona continued their excellent start to the season. 10 points from a possible 12 for Girona, who are second. They beat Las Palmas by 1-0. Mallorca and Athletic Club finished 0-0. Atletico and Sevilla was postponed. And then Barcelona beat Osasuna by 2-1 at El Sadar on Sunday evening. We'll start off in Madrid, Sydney, because you are at the Bernabeu. Before we get to the football, how is the brand new, it's not that new, but how is the new Bernabeu looking?
Yeah, I mean, it feels very, very, very different from the outside in terms of the space it occupies, in terms of the way it looked, particularly the space it occupies, because obviously one of the things that's happened is that space in front of the Castellana has kind of been taken over by the stadium, and they've kind of opened up a space on the backside as well, where there used to be kind of a little mini shopping centre built into the side of the stadium, and that's kind of opened up the space, and of course the fact that it's all silver now means that it looks very, very different. Inside, the difference is less in the sense that it's not a new stadium. I mean, I've listened to a lot of people, got a lot of very angry Real Madrid fans yesterday, by the way, on Twitter, having a go at me for making this point.
No.
And it wasn't a, but really kind of bizarrely unnecessary anger as well.
No.
The point being that I'd heard a lot of people say the new Bernabeu as if this is a complete reconstruction. And it's not. It's the old stadium with this kind of outer casing put on it, which enables them to do things like, I think there's a couple of restaurants, there's going to be a hotel, there's kind of skywalks and stuff. It's about generating commercial revenue throughout the year. Obviously, the really big thing is the stadium roof, which was closed at the weekend. But the kind of the looking at the pitch part of it is not dramatically different. There's a slight raising, I think, in the corners. The side where the press sit, which is the east side of ground, has been raised up a little bit to join the others. Although it doesn't quite join in the corner bits. There's kind of a step down. But the seats sort of looking at the pitch, that part of it hasn't changed. And the other thing, obviously, that means it hasn't changed, or that means that I kind of questioned the idea of calling this a new stadium, is it's in the same place, the pitch is in the same place, and actually it hasn't been closed all this time. We've continued to go to the Bernabeu. It's not like we haven't been to the Bernabeu. That so far this season has been three consecutive away games as they accelerate some of the work, but it hasn't been that it hasn't gone. The big difference, I suppose, in terms of the match day experience this time, was that the noisy part of the fans are back down in the lower part of the south tier, whereas before that was the one bit that was tarpaulined off and they were pushed a little bit higher up and it didn't help in terms of atmosphere. And I think, although I think I want to see a European game to be able to judge this properly, that the closing of the roof might have helped the acoustics, might have made it feel that little bit louder. But obviously it will be the European nights where we really see that. But as I say, the kind of the looking at the pitch part of it, that hasn't changed enormously, not least, of course, because it didn't need to, because it was already by far and away the best ground in Spain and probably even in Europe. So there was maybe a little bit too much made of the idea of a new home, but obviously for Bellingham it was a new home and it turned out rather nicely.
It's a city where it doesn't actually rain that much, Madrid, so some people were questioning the validity or necessity of a roof. Obviously Florentino Perez is a very powerful man and he must have had a word with the gods to make it rain.
really prove the point.
To show that, you see, we do need this roof, but there we go. You mentioned
this is going to sound very silly, Phil. Sorry, just to interrupt for a moment. Right, this is going to sound very silly, but allow me to say it because I actually think this matters in a minor sort of way. But I think this matters. Is the roof going to be closed every time it rains? Is it going to be closed basically,
obviously,
all the time anyway? And is it going to be closed all the way? Now, the reason I raise this is that on Saturday, it didn't really rain very much during the game. And obviously what the roof does, it means that the fans in the stadium don't get wet. Now, it used to be that you basically got wet from around about the 10th or 15th row upwards. So most of the stadium didn't get wet anyway, because unlike a lot of Spanish stadiums, it did have a roof all the way around. It just didn't join in the middle. Now, the reason I ask this is that maybe this makes me old-fashioned and maybe this makes me English. Football in the rain is brilliant. And if you're denying the chance for the game to be in the rain, maybe not the fans, but the game to be in the rain, I think that's a pity. I think that loses some of the epicness of it. And so I wonder if there's an option to kind of close the roof just enough that gets the pitch wet, but not the people.
That's not going to happen. No, that's it's definitely going to be closed all the time it's raining. All the time, definitely. I mean, it wasn't even properly raining on Saturday.
No, that's what I mean. Yeah. It wasn't particularly bad on Saturday. We, you know, all right, of course, look, from a fan's point of view, you welcome it. Absolutely you do. But I don't know, man. I just think football's supposed to be played in the rain.
Yeah, that is a very sort of British perspective. Let's acknowledge where
maybe
we
it
are.
Is.
Let's acknowledge where we are.
Yes. Yeah maybe it is.
You're quite right. In the intro, I suggested it was Barold Aspas who scored the winner for Celta Vigo, and it wasn't. It was Willy Svedberg. Apologies for that oversight. Anyway, back to...
I think it's his first goal as well, isn't it? He's only a kid. He wasn't really getting opportunities last year.
And it was very nicely taken as well, and it was late on, and it was quite dramatic. Back to the Bernabeu, and obviously you were there to see the game, but also to see Jude Bellingham, who had another goal-scoring performance, scored in every game he's played in, 5 goals, La Liga's top goal scorer. It was another number 9 goal. It was another big in the right place at the right time goal. He hasn't had a spectacular screamer or an individual piece of brilliance, but being in the right place at the right time as a consequence of the position that he's playing. What did you think of Jude up close in the Bernabeu?
Well, I thought he played really well. I thought he was all over the pitch again. I thought again we saw a demonstration of the personality, because this was a game, as you might expect, against Getafe, that wasn't always pretty. Although I actually thought the introduction of Toni Kroos in the second half made a huge difference, and Real Madrid were, I thought, really quite good actually in the second half. Even though it took them a while to get through, I thought they played pretty well in the second half. Not great in the first. And Bellingham was, again, covered a lot of ground. I thought he went to the right more often than he'd done in previous games, and I think that partly is a product of the difference between having Rodrigo and Vinicius in front of you and Rodrigo and Joselu in front of you. Because if Joselu is in front of you, by definition, to sort of go beyond him, you go to the right of him, because he doesn't split open in the way that Rodrigo and Vinicius do to allow Bellingham to run through them. That meant at times maybe he didn't have as much, if you like, protagonism as perhaps in other games. There were two or three really, really clever passes. There's one that releases Carvajal in the second half that really liked, really nice angled pass. He didn't back down when he had Getafe players trying to kind of ruffle him up. In fact, there's a lovely moment right at the very end of the game. Now, I know it's easy to do right at the end of the very end of the game, but I quite enjoyed it, which is when you got Gaston Albelef try and barge him off the pitch, and Bellingham sort of took the hit and kind of stood there a bit with his hands on his hips and just looked at the crowd, and there was a smile, and I think the hint of a wink that sort of said, yeah, we've got him, haven't we? This is all right, isn't it? and I just think we saw that personality again of Bellingham, the refusal to back down, that nice combination I think he's got of being in awe of Real Madrid in terms of everything he says, you know, this is huge, this is amazing, this is Real Madrid, it's the biggest thing on earth, and at the same time of looking like he doesn't care that it's Real Madrid. Real Madrid, well, and? I can play. I've got this. And that, I think, is the thing that defines him. I've got this. Now, obviously, the thing that's really defining him at the moment is the goals. And I think it's worth pointing out what you say. They've all been number nine goals. He said post-game this time round, his line was, there's a lot of mental work that goes into that. Wondering if the ball was going to drop, seeing that it might fall to me. And if you notice, he sets off as soon as Lucas Vazquez hits the shot. And most players don't. I mean, to the extent that he is alongside a number nine, Joselu, and he gets there first. The number nine doesn't. Joselu doesn't. And he sets off, and really and truly sets off for a shot that shouldn't drop to him. Because David Solier, who's had a brilliant game, should catch that and should hold on to it. And if you notice, Solier spills it, but reacts really quite fast to get to it. But Bellingham is already on the run and is so much quicker. And I don't think it's chance. And Ancelotti spoke post-game about this shift with him, and he said, look, we've shown him some videos. What we mostly did was show him videos of the things that he did at Dortmund that we liked closer to goal. He said, now it's true that at Dortmund he would come and receive the ball between the lines a little bit, and here he's not doing that. He said, but there were things he did at Dortmund that we would show him, and we were essentially saying, keep doing this. He said, we don't have to talk to him all that much because he's bright and he gets it and he understands and he has a capacity to learn very, very quickly, so we've not had to repeat things. But there's no doubt that part of Bellingham's success this season has been a positional success.
Let me just give you an example of the massive impact that Bellingham has had on the people in Madrid. I can tell you that my five-year-old boy, when he's playing football with his little friends in the plaza in the square, when they've been scoring, they've been doing the Bellingham celebration. So there we go. That just gives you the idea of how quickly he's been taken to by everyone.
That's pleasing, isn't it? If only because it might finally bury the CU.
There are Sioux as well, Sid. There
are
always
Sioux.
Are
they? Sioux. Oh, no.
Oh, God. They're non-stop. But the Bellingham celebration has also been very much heavily adopted. Let's move on, because there's lots of stuff we could talk about, and there's more stuff we could talk about Real Madrid. And if you want us to send us a question, and we'll do so. We want to talk about Osasuna 1, Barcelona 2. I've lost count, I think, over the last year and a half in our WhatsApp group, where you've sent me the message, I don't think Barcelona are very good. And it feels strange because obviously we're talking about the champions, we're talking about a team that were worthy champions last year and they won again yesterday, but we can't shake this feeling, and it's a feeling that we've had for a while, that they're not at their best, and they weren't again against Osasuna, a heavily rotated Osasuna side. You look at that starting 11 that Osasuna put out and you think, what on earth is going on? Because they'd been in action in their Conference League playoff on Thursday night. The vast majority of their first team is on the bench, and yet they gave Barcelona a really, really tough game.
Yeah, they did. Now, obviously, in fairness, despite the rotated team, Osasuna at home should give you a tough game. That, I suppose, should be the starting point here. the only team they didn't really give a tough game to was Athletic. And actually, to be fair, even in that game, in the last half an hour, they certainly did, albeit it was a little bit one-dimensional. I think with Barcelona, we feel... One of the reasons, I suppose, why we maybe talk about this more with Barcelona than with other teams, and I think Barcelona fans might well be entitled to say, well, Madrid don't convince either. But there's something about Madrid that we sort of... I don't know, we kind of expect them to find a way through without always necessarily dominating. But Barcelona's identity, at least in theory, is domination, it's control of possession, it's not ceding opportunities because of possession rather than because of deep defending. It's creating chances, it's maintaining possession, it's having the ball all the time, it's the quality of the interchange between the midfielders. And those things are not really happening that much. And you know, there's one or two other doubts as well, specific ones. Robert Lewandowski, for example, we're looking at him and thinking, it's not quite fitting for him. And he has said that he thinks he doesn't get sufficient chances, that the ball doesn't come to the kind of positions he would want sometimes. And yeah, I think the overall feeling with Barcelona is that this doesn't entirely convince. That said, obviously, the arrival of João Cancelo, and we saw a couple of little moments last night, should help because they haven't really had a right back for the last year or so. Who knows, maybe João Félix will help. I still don't entirely see the fit in the team, but maybe to the left-hand side of a front three, maybe that does work for him and it gives him a bit of freedom to kind of float away, around and be off the forward rather than necessarily out wide all the time. But I agree with you, it doesn't entirely convince. The other thing I suppose as well to kind of put everything into the balance is to say that they are different when Pedri's around, and Pedri, of course, at the moment isn't around.
No Pedri, no Ronald Araujo, arguably their two most crucial players, along with Lewandowski, and they've both been out for a while, and they will be. The two Joaos came on. Cancelo came on for the last half hour. João Félix came on for the last 10 minutes. We've spoken about our, if not stupefaction, but slight bewilderment at the signing of João Félix. We could not see how or why it would happen, but it did happen. Congratulations to Jorge Mendes on some truly excellent work in the transfer window, bringing in the two Joaos, both of his clients, and moving on Ansu Fati. Really some sterling work there done by Jorge Mendes. And we'll see, who knows? Maybe we'll end up being made to look extremely silly, Sydney, because we publicly said we don't see how João Félix necessarily fits into the team or why they are spending the money that they're spending on him. What's the point of it? But if he comes in and plays extremely well, we will be made to look silly.
Well, and also, to be fair as well, the first part of our doubts about this have already been overcome, which were how do Barcelona afford this and how do they get him registered? Now, that part's already overcome, and that's the most important part. So you start from your starting point is there's actually quite a lot of attacking players. You don't really need him. You're probably going to need a fight for this. You're probably going to need to spend quite a lot of money for this. Now, those parts have been overcome. So now you come back purely to the how does he fit in the team? Well, as I've said, off the left, with a little bit of freedom, it might well fit all right, particularly if you've got Balde going up outside him so that he doesn't necessarily need to play wide left so that he can drift inside. Maybe that can work. Maybe that was a role that could have worked for Ansu Fati. For whatever reason, it seems Xavi's not entirely enamoured of Ansu Fati. And yes, there are doubts, I think, in his fit in the team, but I do think the most important thing has been overcome, which is we looked at this and thought, why would a team in this position get itself in a fight for a player that could be very costly? Actually, that part of it, it looks like Barcelona may have been able to handle reasonably well.
That's true. He extended his contract with Atletico Madrid for two more years before moving to Barcelona on loan, which meant that Barca didn't have to pay the amortisation on his transfer. He is having his wages, though, covered by Barcelona. So let's see. Good luck to João Félix in Barcelona. Because if this doesn't work out, Sydney, if this doesn't work out, it's not quite last chance saloon for him. It's not far off because he's had chances. He's had chances at Atletico. Yeah, chances at Chelsea, and now he's got a chance at Barcelona. So let's see how he gets on.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Going for your first ever run around the park. Literally running errands all over town. Running for the finish line and your personal best. If you run, you're a runner. Find the shoes and clothes to run your way at newbalance.com/running. New Balance. Run your way.
This episode is brought to you by Etsy. Looking to instantly upgrade your Mother's Day gift from typical to meaningful? Shop Etsy. Now until May 12th, get up to 30% off personalized jewelry, style, decor, and so many other items mom will love. And if you want her to know you put a ton of thought into her present, use Gift Mode. Gift Mode on Etsy takes the stress out of gifting so you can easily find well-crafted, original, and affordable pieces from small shops. Just tap or click Gift Mode on your Etsy app or Etsy.com. Then answer a few short questions about mom, and Gift Mode instantly gives you curated ideas based on hundreds of personas. Need something original and affordable for Mother's Day? Etsy has it. Shop until May 12th for up to 30% off gifts for mom. Terms apply.
I want to talk about Real Sociedad and that 5-3 victory against Granada. They'd only scored two goals before this game, but they put five past Granada. They could have scored more as well. There was some lovely free-flowing football. Some of the goals scored are absolute peaches. Take Kubo is the conductor of the orchestra, and we were wondering who might pick up where David Silva left off, and they're not two, you know, exactly the same kind of players, but there are similarities, and Take Kubo is obviously proving to be an extremely important player for this La Real team.
I really loved what he said post-game as well. So he's comes to the pitch side, and the first question is basically, wow, that's four games this season. You've been man of the match four times. And he said, yeah, and maybe this is the only time that I actually deserved it, which I thought was brilliant. I said this to you, didn't I? I was at the game against Celta, and La Real fell away really bad in the second half. But in the first half, I thought he was brilliant. And he's very exciting. He's very dynamic. He's prepared to go at people. He's got nice line in angled passes. He runs beyond the defensive line, if the defensive line is high, really, really well. Times those runs well. I think his finishing is pretty good. Admittedly, at the weekend, the second of the two that he scored, which looks like an absolutely brilliant goal at first view, takes a pretty serious deflection. I think without it, might not have gone in. But he's a really, really nice player. As you say, it's slightly different to Silva. It's less about the angled passes. It's maybe a little bit more about the mobility. But I think he's looking very, very good indeed. With La Real, I suppose the question mark, particularly with the Champions League coming up, is going to be, similar to what it's been for all of these seasons with them since Imanol took over. All the way through this period, we've had moments where we thought, wow, they're really good. In fact, we had two seasons where we wondered midway through if they might even compete for the league title. And both times, the tail off was very significant in the second half of the season. Not to the extent, I think, of being critical of them, because I think maybe they'd actually overachieved in the first, and there was a certain element of regressing to the norm. But I think they're a very, very talented team. Be interesting as well, by the way, to see how well Tierney plays, because actually I thought he was pretty good this weekend.
Kieran Tierney going straight into the starting 11, and yeah, you're right, doing pretty well. And it looks like he's got that left-back spot for his own. I mean, he'll have Ian Munoz for competition, but obviously Emmanuel liked what he saw, put him straight in, and was repaid with a decent performance. So La Real with a big win against Granada. But we should also mention Girona and that terrific start they've had to the season. I've been writing about them today, so I've got a few of the stats and facts fresh in my mind. But they've had two clean sheets so far this season, Sid, and that might not sound like a big deal, but two clean sheets in four matches. Last year, it took them 6 months to keep one clean sheet. It came on match day 20. It was not something that they were capable of doing. And obviously, they've done it this season, losing Oriol Romeu, losing Santi Bueno as well. They brought in Daley Blind. Daley Blind to Girona felt like one of those sort of random transfers that is generated by a random transfer bot or something. It was a little bit left field, shall we say. But he's come in and he's done pretty well. That said, Sid, Las Palmas could easily have scored at the weekend.
Yeah,
They rode their luck a little bit against Sevilla as well when they won 2-1 a couple of weeks ago. So I think we should be wary of getting too carried away. But at the same time, the transfer market's been decent for them. Yes, they lost Oriol Romeu and Tati Castellanos, but they've brought in some decent players. They brought Porto back from Getafe, and he scored the winner against Las Palmas. They've got Eric Garcia on loan, who's going to help a lot with the salida de balón, the bringing the ball out from the back, which is what they're really quite good at under Michel. And I was looking at the stats, Sid. They have touched the ball. They've had more touches in their own third than any other team in La Liga, and by a lot as well. They're way ahead of anyone else. But then they have almost the fewest number of touches in the attacking third. So they build up very nicely from the back, and then when they get in and around the penalty area, it's bim-bam, shoot. That's the plan. That's the plan, and that's my assessment after four games. Maybe we're reading too much into it. But massive credit to Michel, who we've spoken about a lot on the podcast over the last couple of years. And they remain one of the best coach teams in La Liga, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the reasons why when a couple of minutes ago you were saying, well, maybe we shouldn't get too excited yet because they're a little bit fortunate this time in that Las Palmas could have scored, maybe a little bit fortunate against Sevilla. But I think one of the things that kind of invites us, maybe it's a trap, invites us to be enthusiastic about them, invites us to like them, invites us to think they're genuinely a good team, is precisely the fact that, as you say, that they've got a coach that everybody likes. They've got a coach that speaks very well. They are a team where you can see what they're trying to do. So I think that does occasionally lead you into the trap of kind of believing that everything's a plan, if you see what I mean. Watching them and going, oh, well, they're really good because I can see what they're trying to do. Whereas some other teams, maybe you don't see it quite as clearly. Maybe the identity's not as clear. And so therefore, you're less inclined, if you see what I mean, to see everything as part of a plan, as part of the you know, a preconceived idea, and it just sort of happens, and you think, well, you know, it just kind of happened. Whereas with Girona, you always feel like you're watching what was supposed to happen, and it feels like that's clear. And I think that is a good thing. I think there is occasionally a risk that you fall into that trap. I also think there's a double reading, if you like, of those statistics of the ball in their own half. That tells you maybe that they possibly that they wait a little bit too long to see the ball out from the back, that maybe they're trying to bring the other teams onto them and sometimes it doesn't happen as quickly as they would like. Maybe then at the other end they're not as incisive with the ball as they would like to be, or maybe they lose it a little bit quicker than they would like. But I do think they're a good side. I do think they have good players. I do like Michel, and there's a stability about them that suggests that I'm not going to go so far as to say, yeah, they're going to stay up there. But I wouldn't be surprised if they were a team that maybe took the place of what Rayo have been the last couple of years. Do you know what I mean? That team that sort of shouldn't be near the European places, but is. So maybe we see... I wouldn't be at all surprised, for example, if Girona finished 7th or 8th this year. Mm-hmm. That wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, we've got the international break now, but after when we come back from the international break, they've got 5 games before the next international break against Granada, Mallorca, Villarreal, Real Madrid and Cádiz. Those 5 matches, there's points there for Girona to be to get, and we could still be talking about them being in top 4 by the next international break. But yeah, maybe let's not get too carried away, but congratulations to them on their terrific start. We should talk about transfers, Sydney, because the transfer window slammed shut a few days ago, and there were some eye-catching and surprising deals that were made, not least Sergio Ramos, who at the time of recording, I don't think it's official, but it will be. Is it official? Have you seen anything? I haven't seen anything official.
I don't know if it's official, to be honest. No, I've not seen anything.
But he's going back to Seville. He's going back to Sevilla, despite all summer, basically, Pepe Castro, the Sevilla president, going, it's never happening, it can't happen, it's not happening. But he's back. He's going to come back into a Sevilla side that are bottom of the table, that have lost all 3 of their matches so far, that have conceded plenty of goals and that have seemingly always have 2, 3 or 4 centre-backs injured, which is why they're signing 37-year-old Sergio Ramos. Just quickly, because we've got a few transfers to talk about, but this is perhaps one of the most mediatic ones. Sydney, 37-year-old Sergio Ramos slotting into a José Luis Mendilibar team that usually plays with really one of the highest defensive lines in La Liga. It doesn't necessarily feel like a match made in heaven, despite Ramos's historical ties to the club.
No, that's true. I mean, for what it's worth, I love the fact that he's going back, and I really hope it goes well, and it'll be quite fun, although there's a lot to be done in terms of relationship with the fans. You're right, that part of it, I think he has to have a quick central defensive partner. The one thing I would say is, for a team that presses high, Ramos's willingness to come out of that line and win the ball early, and if he doesn't win it, to make the foul so the team can't carry on through, is potentially useful if the timing can be right. And I used to feel this a lot with Ramos, and actually I used to feel it a lot with Carlos Puyol as well, that they were players that when the timing wasn't right, they could be disastrous because they would go out and leave this big gap behind them. But when they got to those key moments of the season where like the level of concentration is absolutely right, where the fitness level is absolutely right, that willingness to come out and get the ball, you know, the ball's dropping, it's sort of in the midfield and the centre-back comes 7 or 8 metres further forward than his normal position, but gets there, then it's great. It's fine. The question is if you're not getting there. But I'm quite excited. And you know, you look, as you say, you talk about the problems they've had at the back. The likely centre-back partnership against Atletico Madrid last night, which obviously was rained off, would have been probably Bade and Gudelli. And Gudelli obviously isn't a central defender. And this has been happening a lot. He's had to play at centre-back a lot, and I really like him, but it's not his natural position. If you're going to worry about the fitness of Fernando Reyes in midfield, you're probably going to have to move him into the midfield. So you do want... I actually think in purely footballing terms, you probably do want Sergio Ramos.
Okay. He returns to the club 18 years after he left. A large section of the Sevilla supporters have never forgiven him for leaving to Real Madrid. And every time he went back with Real Madrid, there was a really, really hostile atmosphere. And I think that also led to a rivalry being sort of created between Real Madrid and Sevilla, particularly because of the hostility that they faced whenever they went back to the Ramon Sanchez Pizjuan. So now those fans, let's see how they take to Sergio Ramos returning. Mm-hmm. But it's a big transfer. It's going to be interesting. Other transfers, by the way, they also signed Mariano Diaz on a free. Sevilla, which is...
I want to tell you some stats on Mariano because I, you know, Mariano is a sometime footballer. Are you ready for this?
He's a very rich man, Sid. Yes.
Yes. Mariano's La Liga minutes over the last five seasons: 150, 332, 505, 37, 438. I added those up. There are significant numbers of his Real Madrid teammates who got more minutes than that in the first half of last season, and that's a 5-year tally for him.
Yes, he's not played a lot of football recently, but let's see. I mean, I don't even know why they signed him, unless Saudi Arabia's coming in for Youssef En-Nesyri or something, because they've got En-Nesyri. They've still got Rafa Mir as well.
Yeah, I thought it was very interesting because I could understand the desperate need for a forward if you think you're losing one of those two. The fact that they didn't, and they dug their heels in on Rafa Mir because Rafa Mir actually wanted to go. And you're right, it makes me think, hang on, the Saudi window, correct me if I'm wrong, has still got, I think,
Until the 7th. Right.
Oh, OK, fewer than I thought. Yeah, okay, yeah, only 3 days left. But you're then in a position where you're stuck.
Yeah.
Because if they come and pay the buyout clause, I must confess, I don't know what the buyout clause of En-Nesyri is, then you can't stop him going.
Yeah.
And I suppose you've got to have something in case that happens. If it doesn't happen, though, Mariano's not going to play as many minutes at Sevilla. He's, I mean, it's going to be the same as at Real Madrid. He's not going to play, is he?
Well, at least he's not going to be too bothered, you know.
Well, that's true. They've signed a player who's demonstrated quite clearly that he's not that worried about not playing, which is kind of sad. But, you know, I suppose ultimately getting paid a lot of money for not doing very much is the ideal job, really.
Ez Abde has joined Real Betis, which looks like a really good signing. They paid €7.5 million for 50% of his rights to Barcelona. Barca were adamant that they wanted to sell him. Didn't want a loan. They wanted to get some money in for him, which they did. It looks like a good bit of business all round, really.
Yeah, I think it does. I wonder if Barcelona might regret not having him this season, although obviously with João Félix coming in, perhaps not. I'm not sure they were going to play him a huge amount anyway. €7 million seems quite a lot for 50% of him, but not a huge amount. And if Betis can...
Really?
Yeah, quite a lot. When you think...
You don't think he's a 15 million euro player?
Well, that's essentially why I'm saying it. I'm not sure if he is a 15 million euro player in Spanish context.
Mate.
I think an English team...
15 million euros. Yeah, right.
It's nothing in England. It's quite a lot in Spain. But then I suppose, in a way, does it matter if you only have half of him? You know, as long as you're playing him. So I suppose we don't need to look at it as a 15 million. Look at it as 7. And actually, Betis... Pellegrini doesn't half like technical players. They might be fun to watch Betis this year because he's done it again. He always wants players who want a bit of the ball, who want to play. I mean, I think we've all overlooked the fact that Ayoce now is owned by Betis. I think it was really good last year. Has had a good start to this season. Obviously, Isco, everyone's talking about him. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know whether Barca, in the end, would actually not be that worried at having lost him. But on the face of it, my initial thought was, oof, that's a bit easy.
The most eye-catching and absolutely surprising transfer took place late on deadline day with Mason Greenwood joining Getafe. Mm. Not sure where to start with this one, Sid. I'll give you just the general feeling that I got in Spain when this happened. One, the initial feeling was surprised, like, oh, Getafe have signed a Man United player on loan. What's going on here? And then I think people started to realise what was happening. And then that's when the surprise and shock sort of took over. I think amongst Getafe fans, they're delighted. I don't think there's been too much resistance to No. Mason Greenwood joined from Getafe fans. I don't know if it's unfair to maybe call Getafe the Millwall of Spanish football, but there's a little bit of no one likes us, we don't care attitude about them. So in terms of resistance from the own fans, I don't think there is going to be too much. But broadly speaking, there's been quite a lot of disappointment at this signing, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it took a little while, didn't it? Because you say the initial reaction, it was very late on the Friday night, and you got that footage of the fans celebrating outside the ground. And, you know, that was picked up a little bit on the social media and picked up a little bit in the UK. So, oh, look, this is terrible. Look how they're celebrating. I think you need to put that into context. This is a small group of fans at midnight, possibly just kind of part of the silliness of, you know, here we are. A lot of them won't even know. Or at least it won't have properly stopped to think about Mason Greenwood. Obviously, this jars a little bit in the context of everything that's happened for the last 2 weeks. Angel Torres, the president of Getafe, was the first person, pretty much, to come out and say Rubiales cannot continue in the federation. Now, obviously, he would argue, I guess he would argue, I don't know, maybe I'm being overgenerous to offer him this argument, that there's a difference between the role and the social significance of president of a federation and a guy who plays up front for Getafe. But it does jar, and it jars quite a lot. I asked Bordalás about this. There was a couple of us who asked Bordalás about this on Saturday after the game. And Bordalás said, look, I can only really talk about this from a footballing point of view. He said, I think everybody knows the background to this. The measures were taken at the time. He got a sentence that was not, that I don't know how to translate this properly, non-condemnatory. Now, that's not the same as saying he got found not guilty, because, of course, it wasn't that. It was that the case was basically dropped. And he said, and what we will do now is try to help him and try to get the best out of him. And I think that's the other thing is, I'm deeply uncomfortable with this, by the way. I don't want to present this as, well, this is the thing, and make it sound like this is what I'm embracing. This is the view from Getafe fans. I asked a couple of colleagues who cover Getafe, and one of them is a Getafe fan as well. And the response from both of them was a little bit, well, it's Getafe, isn't it? Little Getafe, and they've got a Man United player. So, of course, everybody... I was asking them about the fans. I wasn't really asking them about them. And so everybody's fault really is, we're Getafe and we've got a Man United player. That's amazing. And I think it probably is going to take a few days for it to properly percolate through and for people to think, oof. And one of them did say to me, she said, this feels really, really weird. And she said, and I must admit, even I, you know, when it first happened, I thought, oh, big signing. And then I thought, hang on a minute, this is jarring. But I don't think it's caused, certainly within the sports media at least, it doesn't seem to have caused a huge noise, at least not yet. I mean, it might at some point, if voices come out and condemn it.
Yeah, it hasn't yet, but give it some time, maybe. Okay, before we go, a quick mention of what's going on in the Segunda División, where Zaragoza are top with 12 points from a possible 12, 4 wins out of 4. They beat Eldense 2-0. Espanyol are second after a dramatic 3-2 comeback win against Amorebieta. Leganés 1-1-0 at Eibar. And Oviedo are bottom, Sid, after a 1-1 draw at Levante. The good news is that you're only 6 points off the playoffs, so...
It's early, and there's still plenty of time. I must admit, when Oviedo signed Santi Cazorla, I didn't honestly look at it as a signing we desperately needed. I'm now starting to think it might be. I looked at it as a signing I was delighted about, but not necessarily one that was an absolute necessity. And I now wonder if it might be exactly that.
Yes, indeed. Hopefully he can lead you to safety and charge up the table towards the... towards the playoffs. That's it for this week's edition of the Spanish Football Podcast. Spain are in action in the World Cup qualifiers on Friday. They're away to Georgia. So we'll be talking about that over at patreon.com/TSFP for the rest of the week. We'll also be taking your questions. So come and join us, as we said, €4 a month for loads of extra Spanish football content. And if you don't want to do that, it's okay. We won't hold it against you. What we will do is do another free podcast right here next Monday. Adios.
Cheerio.